Coming up on today's edition of the Locked On Raiders podcast, a cornerback has a minor surgery on Tuesday. Even though it's minor, I'll give you a major concern that I have for that position and what the Raiders need to do to address it. Plus, we'll continue to get to know the Raiders draft picks as we move to round four. We'll get some insight on running back Zamir White from Georgia and also Neil Farrell Jr. from LSU. That's all coming up on today's edition of the Locked On Raiders podcast for Wednesday, May 4th, 2022.
Your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Just win.
Your team
Just every day. Just win.
You're a win as a Raider. Pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.
And welcome in, Raider Nation, to another edition of the Locked On Raiders podcast. Thank you so much for making the show your first listen each and every day. Remember, you can find Locked On Raiders podcast free and available on all platforms. And today's episode is being brought to you by Blue Nile. You know, Mother's Day is right around the corner. Make sure you give mom something she'll treasure forever with fine jewelry from BlueNile.com. And all listeners of the Locked On Raiders podcast will get $50 off of a $500 purchase if you use the promo code Locked On at checkout. Tell you all about Blue Nile a little bit later on in the show. But right now, let's get into the news and notes of the day here in segment number one of the Locked On Raiders podcast. And off top, I noticed on Tuesday, Vic Tafer from The Athletic, matter of fact, he tweeted about it first. Trayvon Mullen, Raiders cornerback, had tweeted a picture of himself, or maybe put it on Instagram, but he put out a picture of himself in a doctor's office saying he was about to have another surgery. And Vic had noted that it was a minor surgery. And later on in the day, Trayvon Mullen actually tweeted out, "No worries, successful surgery. Thanks to all. Also want to thank my negative supporters as well. Back better than ever." So he had a little minor surgery, and it's not a big deal. A lot of guys have surgeries in the offseason, little cleanup work. But I'll tell you this, when it comes to Trayvon Mullen, and I talked about this quite a bit on my show, Unnecessary Roughness, on Raider Nation Radio 920 on Tuesday. When it comes to Trayvon Mullen, it always seems to be some kind of injury. He's always banged up. Something's always going on with the young man, and I hate that because I really like him as a player. I think he's a good defensive back. I liked him from the minute that the Raiders drafted him. Liked him when he came in about halfway through his rookie year, you know, and I thought he played well. But man, when it comes to injuries, Trayvon Mullen is always injured. You remember what happened to him last season where he went out, he was on IR, his short-term IR, then he finally came back, and then boom, he was out again. I mean, as quick as he got back, he was out again. And so to see that he's having surgery, or he had surgery on Tuesday, again, it's not a big deal because you know that they always have cleanups during the, you know, during the offseason, but it just lets me know that that cornerback position is not secure. It is not a position that the Raiders have basically locked down. You know, they need some help. They need some added players at that position. I do think they need to go out and get a veteran. And the veteran I'm looking at in particular is James Bradbury from the New York Giants. He's a guy that's been rumored to be on the trade block for a while. He's a guy that's been rumored to potentially be released at some point if the Giants can't get what they want for him. They just can't afford to have him on the roster just because of what they're trying to do as far as get back under the salary cap position. But I'll say this, man. I think the Raiders need to do anything and everything in their power to go get James Bradbury. He's a guy that knows Patrick Graham system. He knows the scheme. He was there in New York with them, and he can come in and be that veteran just like Casey Hayward was last season for Gus Bradley. And look, I'm not trying to hit the panic button. I'm not saying all is lost if they don't go make this move. I just think that it's going to help improve that defense in a major way. I like the pieces that they have on defense, but they definitely need a veteran corner at that position. I know they brought Rocky Sin in, and most people visualize Rocky Sin and Trayvon Mullen, but can you count on Trayvon Mullen to be healthy and be there most of the time? That you cannot. So in my mind, you go out there, you make a move for James Bradbury, you bring him in, he's going to be one starter. Then you have Trayvon Mullen, you have Rocky Sin, you have them compete for that other spot. And then once you find the two starters, then you have a lot of great quality depth behind them because the Raiders have gone and made some moves for some younger guys. Of course, Nate Hobbs, he's going to be very much in the mix as well. I think he's going to end up being the slot corner, the starting slot corner like he was his rookie year. But you know, you never know. Maybe he can earn a spot on the outside. I think he has the ability to do that, but they're probably comfortable playing him in the position that he played his rookie year and really showed out. So I was very excited about the possibilities of Nate Hobbs and what he could bring to the mix. But I do think that those corners on the outside really need to, you know, be upgraded as far as that cornerback room. So we'll see what happens. But if Bradbury at all is available, I think the Raiders need to do anything and everything in their power to go get him. Also on Tuesday, the NFL released the offseason workout dates for every team across the league. So for the Raiders, rookie minicamp will get started May 13th and 14th. That'll be the first opportunity for the regime to get a look at the players that they selected, also the undrafted free agents, and maybe they'll even have one of those weekend camps, one of those three-day weekend camps where they can get some look for some guys that still are out there on the streets looking for a job. Then also OTAs, May 23rd and 24th, May 26th, June 1st through 3rd, and then June 13th through 14th. Those are OTAs. They are not mandatory. And then the mandatory minicamp is June 7th through 9th. That's when you expect the whole team to be present and available at the Intermountain Healthcare Performance Center. So those are the next few dates to be paying attention to. Rookie minicamp, OTAs, and then also mandatory minicamp. Now, I had a couple little sound bites that I wanted you to hear from my radio show on Tuesday that I did on Unnecessary Roughness. One was from Ted Nguyen from The Athletic. He does a great football breakdown as far as film goes. He always breaks it down really well. So I had him on to talk about Dylan Parham, the third-round draft pick out of Memphis. And the reason I did this was because he put out a piece on The Athletic talking about scheme fit. And it was 10 guys that were drafted by certain teams that he liked the scheme that they fit with. And number 10 was Dylan Parham. So I wanted to have him on to talk about that. And so he did. So this is what Ted had to say about Parham and why he likes to fit with the Raiders.
Yeah, so Dante Scarnecchia, the former Patriots offensive line coach who worked with Josh McDaniels forever in New England, he was recently on the Athletic football show with Robert Mays, and he said the three things that he prioritized in offensive linemen are toughness, intelligence, and athleticism. So they try to look for those three traits when they scout offensive linemen. And when I was watching Dylan Parham, you know, I just thought he fit that to a T. As far as toughness, you know, he's a little undersized, which is why they think that he's going to move to center, but he can gain some weight. But, you know, he's not a guy that's going to pancake you on every play, but he doesn't get knocked back. He doesn't get bull rushed, and, he blocks through the whistle. And when we're talking about intelligence, it's hard to tell intelligence without actually talking to a player, but when you watch his film, you know, he picks up blitzes, he picks up stunts really smoothly. You can see his eyes are always in the right place. He did a lot of different things in Memphis, and he was able to do those things well. And when McDaniels was Patriots, the run scheme was one of the most diverse in the NFL. They ran a ton of different concepts. So obviously you have to have a high football IQ to play offensive lineman for him. And I think this guy has that. And as far as athleticism, this guy, he tested really well. You can see how fluidly he moved in space. So I just think he's a really great fit for what this McDaniels and this new regime is looking for when it comes to offensive linemen.
And so the thing that we've been talking about a lot when it comes to Parham was his versatility, and is he a guard, is he a center? He could play multiple positions, but I've been feeling the last few days especially that he's going to end up at that center position. So I asked Ted straight up about that. You know, what's his better fit? Where does he think that he's going to compete on this Raiders offensive line?
I think he's going to compete with Andre James. I think Andre James got better throughout the season, but I just don't think he played well enough for this new regime to come in and just hand him a starting spot. I also think that Parham has potential to add a lot more physicality to the inside of his offensive line. I think they really need that. So I think it's going to depend what happens in training camp, but I really think it's going to be a true competition between those two guys.
So I just wanted you to hear those two sound bites from Ted just talking about Dylan Parham. I know we did a little bit of a background on him on a Tuesday show, but when I heard that from Ted, I thought that was something that was pretty important to bring to the podcast. And the final little sound bite that I want you to hear here in segment number one of today's Locked On Raiders podcast comes from my guy, John McClain from the Houston Chronicle, recently retired, but still does work on the Chronicle. And so he had put out following the draft his draft grades, and so many people hit me up and was like, what's up with your boy, why did he give the Raiders a D+? What did they do to get a D+? They had a great draft. And I figured that there was a reason behind it. John's not just gonna throw something against the wall and hope that it sticks. He's not one of those guys that is going for clicks. He's not trying to clickbait. I mean, this dude's a Hall of Famer, so I knew that there was something to it. But as I told everyone who hit me on Twitter about it, I will ask him on Tuesday when he joins the show. So I did, and I asked John, what is the reason why the Raiders got a D+ on your grade after the draft?
I have always graded differently than everybody else. I only grade what happens in the draft. I don't grade how you ended up with few picks because of a trade for a veteran player. Nobody else that I know of does that. They always take into consideration. So I had Miami with the worst draft because they had the fewest picks. Raiders, of course, didn't pick for the first two rounds for a reason, but I didn't take into consideration the Devontae Adams trade. So the first pick, Dylan Parham, guard. I like Zamir White, the running back. There's a chance Matthew Butler, the defensive tackle from Tennessee, can contribute as a rookie. But when you don't pick to the third round, you take a guard, you're not going to get a good grade from me. If I was considering Devontae Adams as part of that, of course the grade would have been higher, but that's not what I do.
So there you go. There's John McClain explaining why the Raiders got a D+. I figured it had a lot to do with the fact that they didn't have a first round or a second round pick, because if you look throughout the rest of his article, and the Broncos are a perfect example, he gave them a C+ because they didn't have a first round pick because of the Russell Wilson trade. So nothing personal. He's not trying to hate on the Raiders or anything like that. Just he grades them differently. And again, grades a couple days after the draft really aren't about a whole lot of anything except for opinion. And I'm okay with that. And I always respect John McClain's opinion. So there you go, Raider Nation. There's your explanation from the general himself, John McClain. Coming up in segment number two, my conversation with Brooks Austin. He covers Georgia for the Dogs Daily on SI.com, talking all things running back Zamir White, the first of two fourth-round draft picks for the Raiders. Before I get to that, though, I do want to tell you about the title sponsor of today's show, which is BlueNile.com, and you know you can celebrate all of life's special moments. From creating the custom engagement ring of her dreams to gifting a classic and timeless jewelry piece, all at prices you won't find at a traditional jeweler. Whether she prefers a statement piece or everyday elegance, BlueNile.com has fine jewelry options for every mom. Shop high-quality classic diamond earrings, elegant tennis bracelets, or gemstone pendant necklaces. You know Mother's Day is around the corner, so if you're looking for fine jewelry but you're having trouble choosing, Blue Nile has jewelry experts on hand 24/7, available by way of phone or chat, to help you find that memorable gift at every budget. This Mother's Day, give mom something she'll treasure forever with fine jewelry from BlueNile.com. All listeners of the Locked On Raiders podcast will get $50 off a $500 purchase. This podcast exclusive is only good through Mother's Day. Make sure you use that promo code Locked On. That's Locked On. Plus, every order is insured, ships free, and arrives in a discreet package, so they won't know what's inside. Shop stress-free. Find your forever piece. Go to BlueNile.com today.
Your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, Raider Nation, here we go. Segment number two of today's Locked On Raiders podcast. Time to start the breakdowns of the fourth round draft picks of the Silver and Black. To help me break it on down, Brooks Austin, who covers Georgia for Dogs Daily on SI.com, he joined the show to talk all things running back Zamir White. Here is that conversation. Joining me now on the phone lines to talk about the fourth round draft pick Zamir White out of Georgia is Brooks Austin. He covers Georgia like a glove for Dogs Daily on SI. Brooks is on Twitter at BrooksAustinBA. And Brooks, thanks so much for your time. As always, definitely wanted to get a little bit of background on Zamir White, a.k.a. Zeus, a guy who led Georgia in rushing in 2020 and 2021. When you hear Zeus, when you see him running strong behind his pads, what do you think about? What comes to mind when you talk about Zeus?
Man, talk about a guy that's overcome a lot. Like, this is a guy that, I mean, when he was born, wasn't even given, I think, a very strong chance to live. So to even make it to where he is now, not to mention the football injuries, this is a guy that's overcome two knee injuries to go and do what he did at the combine in terms of how he tested and the body of work in the SEC. This is a dude that gets better throughout football games, the more and more he can carry the load. To be honest with you, man, to see him run in the 4.4 range, low 4.4 range, right, at the combine was absolutely mind-blowing to me. This is a guy that's been known more for his, you know, ability to take a two-yard gain and turn it into a six because he just carries bodies and things like this. But, you know, known for his short area quickness, not his long speed. So to see him test that well and to see, by all means, him clear off whatever medical questions or concerns, it's just, you know, a testament to not only his rehab process, but you got to give your hats off to that Georgia medical staff as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I'll tell you, the adversity that he's overcome in his life is major. You mentioned back when he was a child and everything, even before he was born, not even given a couple weeks to live, but to be able to come back and be where he's at today is amazing. Now he's in the NFL. As far as his nickname, Zeus, man, I love that name. I got to hear why they call him Zeus.
I mean, I don't know. It's been before he, I think, he even got to Georgia. This is more of a, I think this dates back to him in high school. Because honestly, okay, if you study this dude in high school, I mean, this is a mythical creature in terms of what he did in high school. I mean, honestly, this was a guy, I can't remember quite what it was. I think it was north of 15 yards per touch in high school. I think every fourth carry or every fourth touch, he scored a touchdown in high school, something along those lines. Some of the astronomical stats, some of the craziest stuff you'll see in those Carolinas type of region of the country in terms of high school football. This was one of the premier high school football prospects in all of high school football coming out. Georgia signs him, known for their RBU nature. And Zamir didn't really get the chance to be the number one guy until his junior and senior year. And he did more than well behind a pretty solid offensive line. But, man, the more and more you saw him get comfortable, the games in his game logs where he's got, 26, 22, 18, north of, 18, 22 carries – man, that yards per carry attempts really gain in third and fourth quarter. So when you look at a roster like Oakland where Josh Jacobs, what's going on? Touch right. and go every once in a while, maybe healthy, may not. I really do think there's a chance where, get week seven,
right,
something goes wrong with Josh Jacobs. And you say, hey, we might have to hand the ball to Zamir White 21 times today. Zamir White, he might go off for 130. Now, it's going to look painful. He's going to be earning them. But that's what he did his whole career at Georgia, and it was successful.
I'm not mad at that at all. And, one thing about him as I'm doing some research on him is he's a touchdown machine. He's had 11 touchdowns the last two seasons. I think that's outstanding. So he has a nose for the end zone. What would you say would be maybe his strongest suit as a running back? What does he do the best?
I think he's got good vision within the box.
Okay.
Like this isn't a guy that I would really want to run stretch zone with or, toss it to him and say, hey, go stretch and find the edge or anything like that. I think this is a good first, second down back that can really get positive yards, stay behind, play behind his pads and have a successful career in the NFL at 4 and a clip. You know what I'm saying? Don't expect 80-yard breakers. This isn't Nick Chubb, that type of Georgia back, Todd Gurley, that type of Georgia back. This is much more of, hey, 4 or 5, break it for 30, right? Punch you in the mouth.
Right.
Come third, fourth quarter, you don't want to tackle this guy. Even in the SEC, there were guys in that defensive backfield. You get him in the open field, they don't really want to handle this business because he does really run violently.
He sounds like a guy that just continues to get better and better as the game wears on, and those guys start to get tired, and he starts smelling that blood in the water. So he really gets downhill, which is fantastic. I think that's a great, obviously, attribute of a running back. As far as his pass protection, that's major in the NFL. How do you think he does in that area?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go six-man protection, keep the back in, this is your guy. If you want to free release the back and have him be involved in the passing game outside of a protection standpoint, that wasn't really his bag of tricks at Georgia. Not saying he can't do it, but the Georgia staff not ever really asking him to do it kind of tells me that they didn't want him doing it, which wouldn't make me say the NFL wouldn't want him, right?
Right, right.
But in terms of blitz pickup, he's as clean as they come. In fact, when he got on the field as a redshirt freshman and as a technically a sophomore, it's the first thing Kirby Smart notified about his play was just that this guy's getting on the field with a backfield with Brian Herrien, who's a, NFL free agent type pickup back, and DeAndre Swift, who was, back into the first early second round pick. It's the guy who's fighting with carries in a backfield like that as a redshirt freshman. And because he could do it in the blitz pickup type of environment, and handle, big linebackers, really, really big linebackers like are available in the SEC. So, yeah, he'll sniff it out and stick his nose in there for sure.
What do you think he needs to improve on? What's the one area of his game where it's like, hey, man, if you're going to last in the league for a while, you got to do this better?
Well, I'll say this. The thing about Georgia players, even 5-star running backs like Zamir White.
Yeah.
If Zamir White wants to, he'll play in the league for 12 years because that sucker's going to play special teams. Mm-hmm. He will be a heat-seeking missile. He's got a punt block in his career. Okay, this guy will go out and do it. So in terms of what's he got to do to survive, it ain't no questions about that. He's going to play in the league for a long time because he'll find a way to do it. He did that at Georgia. That's why he got on the field initially. But in terms of, hey, are you going to be a premier back or are you going to be a guy that's just kind of one of the mix in the shuffle, hey, maybe the Baltimore Ravens pick you up and when they need a third and short kind of guy.
Yeah.
He's got to figure out how to stay on the field on third down and be impactful in the passing game, something that we didn't see very much in college. Again, it was a product of opportunity. Georgia chose to do those things with James Cook and Kenny McIntosh. not necessarily Zamir White.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense, and that's a lot of things that you see coming out of college. You know, like, hey, you know, catching the ball in the backfield is a major area of concern because some guys are just running back specialists. That's what they do.
You know, I will say, even the limited opportunities, he didn't really fight the ball to me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
I got you.
Can tell a natural catcher from a non-natural catcher.
Right.
Zamir White tracks it relatively well. He's got naturally soft hands. They're not, you know, bricks of stone. This isn't a guy that needs to play linebacker. This is a guy that just never got thrown the ball in college because he was the first and second down back. He was eating the totes.
So as far as him being a leader in that locker room, because look, Georgia has obviously many great players, many guys that we saw get drafted over the weekend in the NFL draft. So they got a lot of leadership. But what would you say as far as Zamir goes in leadership?
I think more of like a leadership by example type guy.
Okay.
You know, it's a hard worker, man. Like, I don't know what an NFL weight room looks like. He'll go in there and he'll throw weight around with just about anybody, right? He'll be in there longer than everybody and he'll work harder than just about anybody. That's what his nature is. Not really a talker. Like, go watch his, you know, just his clips. If you want to be a fan right now, go watch his highlight tapes. What you won't find is an ecstatic celebration after a touchdown.
Yeah.
You said he has a nose for the end zone. What you won't find is like a big joyous celebration when it's just business,
right?
You know, that's just the way he goes about it. And that's kind of the way he goes about, you know, if you want to say leadership traits, what are they? That's it. It's just a leadership by example guy, not a yapper.
Just a guy that seems like, hey, been there, done that, you know, act like you've been here before.
No, I think it's more of just like Zamir White has been humbled by life.
Right.
And at this point, he's just hungry for whatever he can grab at it. That's what it's and it's just and thankful and joyous at every moment he gets,
but
earns every bit of it and wants more and more and more, right? He's not just satisfied by whatever the next good thing that comes about is. He has perspective that a lot of other people really, really don't have.
Right.
That young man has it.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. So again, with everything that he's been through in his life, that makes a lot of sense that he's just celebrating life. He's not worried about celebrating touchdowns. He's celebrating life. Now, you mentioned Josh Jacobs earlier. He got his fifth-year option declined, so he's going to be an unrestricted free agent after this year. Is there a situation where you see Zamir White being the lead dog with the Raiders?
I mean, like I said, it's such a short lifespan, right?
Right.
I mean, at the running back position.
Yeah.
I think they learned their lesson with Josh, right? Like, you spend a – look like a can't-miss prospect coming out of college. Mm-hmm. You spend a first-round draft pick on him, and then, boom, it's like, hey, we're 4 years into this. Got, you know, maybe a couple 12, 13-game seasons. We're really banged up kind of the whole time, right? Maybe a waste on a first-round draft pick on a running back. Right. It's the whole league's kind of devalued it.
Yep.
Whereas you're sitting here asking me, we haven't even seen Zamir White take an NFL tote. But how many fourth round backs have we seen second year in their contract actually be the guy?
Right.
So that's a great question as to whether or not he's qualified or capable. Absolutely. I mean, I do believe if you can be a 4.3 plus yards per carry guy in the SEC, you'll survive. If you're given the amount of totes in the NFL. Yep. I truly believe that.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. And I think that's just the value of the running back position now in the league. Like you said, you're not going to see too many first round draft pick wide receiver or running backs. You're just not going to see them. You know, it's just, it's not worth it. It's too much wear and tear on their body. And then boom, you know, you're out the door a couple years later. And so you can go get one in the fourth, fifth, sixth round or whatever and say, hey, go run the rock. And then, hey, when you're done, you know,
I think that's the thing, right?
Yep.
We can't go into a draft at any other position. Perhaps maybe a linebacker position, right? Where we can sit here and say, yeah, I mean, of course you can go into the draft and find a starter quality in the fourth.
Right.
What?
Yeah.
You can't say that about a quarterback.
Nope.
You can't say that about tackle. Heck, you can't even say that about a guard or a center, right? If you're drafting guys in the first, you know, 2 days, you think those guys might be starters, but taking a fourth rounder and saying, hey, year two, thinking you give us, you know, 700 yards to be the premier back with a feature beside him. Yeah, that can absolutely happen. No right. other position.
None. And that's just why we tell everyone, don't let your kids grow up to be running backs anymore. let them do something else because they'll make the money and they'll have the longevity at that position. Well, Brooks, fantastic stuff, man. Just wanted to get a little bit of background on Zamir and just what Raider fans should expect from the young man once he gets to training camp, preseason, obviously the regular season. You got anything coming out that you're putting out on Georgia football that we need to be on the lookout for?
man, it's spring football season here in the state of Georgia, so we're finding out what that recruiting big board looks like, man. So yeah, while you guys are doing post draft stuff, it's time for college football programs to start figuring out what their draft board essentially looks like.
Well, you got, hey man, you're feeling pretty good with the national championship still there in Athens, so there's nothing wrong with that.
The whole daggum fan base been taking victory laps, brother.
I know that's right. Well, Brooks, thanks so much for your time, my man. I do appreciate you. We'll have to catch up soon.
No doubt, man.
So that was my conversation right there with Brooks Austin. He covers Georgia for Dogs Daily on SI.com, talking all things running back Zamir White, and I think he's going to be a player. I think he's got an opportunity to be a big-time player, and I think he's going to be a heck of a 1-2 punch this year with Josh Jacobs. After that, we have no idea what's going to happen, but really good breakdown there from Brooks, all things Zamir White. Coming up in segment number 3, going to talk about the second fourth-round draft pick for the Silver and Black. That's LSU defensive tackle Neil Farrell Jr. Billy Embody, who covers LSU for Bengal Tiger on 3, he'll join the show to break him down. That's all coming up after I tell you about our good friends at Built Bar. And I've been telling you about Built Bar for a very long time. And what's got me excited right now about them is their brand new granola bars that they have. They rolled out 3 great flavors, right? Chocolate peanut butter, chocolate coconut, and white chocolate berry. Well, only 2 are available right now because white chocolate berry is all the way sold out. So I cannot wait until my box of granola bars arrives at the house so I can really break it down and let you know exactly how great they are. But I'll tell you right now, if they're anything like the rest of the Built Bars, they are fantastic. If granola bars aren't your style, they have all the originals ones like double chocolate mint brownie, cherry barcia, raspberry peanut brownie, and a whole peanut butter brownie, and a whole lot more. All you got to do is check out the website today, built.com. Make sure when you go to check out, use the promo code LOCKED15. It's all one word, LOCKED15. You can save 15% when you go to check out. But get yourself a great taste of protein bar. It's good for you. It tastes great. If your kids are going to be at home during the summer and you don't want them to have candy, you can leave Built Bars around and tell them, hey, this is your snack right here. They won't know any better. They really won't. They just know it tastes great, and they think that they're having something that they probably shouldn't be having, when at the same time, they're having something that's good for them. So check it out right now. Build up your stock, built.com. Promo code LOCK15, all one word, to save 15% when you check out at built.com.
Your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Here we go, Raider Nation. Segment number 3 of today's Locked On Raiders podcast. Normally, I have calls and texts throughout that Locked On Raider podcast voicemail line here, but since the Raiders had 2 fourth-round picks, I got to have 2 breakdowns of those guys. So in segment number 2, you heard about Zamir White from Georgia. Here you're going to hear about LSU defensive tackle Neil Farrell Jr. He was picked at number 126 overall. Zamir White was picked at number 122. So to help me break him on down, Billy Embody covers LSU for Bengal Tiger on 3. Real good dude. He also covers SMU. So here is that conversation with Billy Embody. Joining me now on the phone lines, talk a little LSU football, is my guy Billy Embody. Covers LSU for Bengal Tiger on 3. Also covers SMU for SMU on 3. And you can find him on Twitter at Billy Embody. And Billy, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Wanted to have you on to talk in particular about Raiders' fourth round draft pick, Neil Farrell Jr., defensive tackle. He's a big boy in the middle. Won a national championship with the Tigers back in 2020. What would you say is the best trait of Neil Farrell when you see him on the field?
You know, I really like his motor. I think he's somebody that, you know, went through a lot. Really emerged on that national championship team as one of the better defensive linemen that they had, more reliable defensive players. And then 2020 was really a tough season just for him personally, with his grandmother kind of going through some health issues. And even by the end of that season, he had returned to the team and was one of the team's better defensive linemen and better defensive players. So for me, I mean, his motor stands out, you know, just his ability to keep going. You know, he's a pass rusher too. He's got some athleticism, some quickness to his game. I think he's going to be somebody that could be relied upon because, you know, even when he got back to LSU after taking some time away, he had to focus on some academics so he could graduate. That was something that was really important to him. He did that. And, you know, he's going to have that graduate sticker next to his name, you know, for LSU, which was important to him. But now he can focus completely on football and being the best player he can be.
You know, a lot of talent evaluators studied him and said that one of the things that stood out to him was the way that he bullies opponents, or he's very physical, like a physical force in the middle of that defensive line. Is that something that you saw as well?
Yeah, and I think he does that with his hands. He's got quick hands. I got the chance to watch Neil actually all the way through. From the Mississippi-Alabama high school all-star game throughout his LSU career, and just, you know, really somebody that stood out to me with that hand quickness. And in the SEC, when you've got guys with length trying to play against you, you got to have a quick punch. You got to have a powerful punch. And he has that in his game.
Talking right now with my guy, Billy Embody, covers LSU for Bengal Tiger on Three. As far as helping out guys around him, I'm looking at Chandler Jones on one side. I'm looking at Max Crosby on the other side. And so you have the big man in the middle helping collapse that pocket. How much better can he make the guys around him?
He really is impressive, his ability to shed blocks. And, you know, if he's going to take some of that focus away from those guys on the outside, that's obviously going to help them get a little bit more production out of them and play a little bit easier. And, you know, like I said, just not have the focus on them as much. I think for LSU, when they had him, though, it was a unit that really was asked to be aggressive as a whole and really come off the ball. And so they didn't have a terrific pass rush group top to bottom. They didn't have somebody like Kalyvon Chass on a few years ago that you could really, really rely on to be a double-digit type sack getter. They really did it as a team. So I think, you know, just they had balance and, you know, maybe Neil brings a little bit of that to the table. He's consistent for the most part. You know, like I mentioned, that 2020 season kind of was different for any, you know, player and in particular him with him returning late. But in 2019 and 2021, he was really somebody that was balanced and in particular really helped, I think, in the pass rush and just like you said, kind of collapsing that pocket.
Well, I've seen some people knock him for his weight and conditioning. They say that he may need to trim up and tighten that up a little bit. Do you see that, or do you think that that's an issue at all?
Yeah, I would say that's an issue for him, and it's something that as he focuses more on football and putting that all together, you would hope that it gets better and improves. You know, he's somebody that during that 2019 season was probably at his best. To be honest, and in 2021, he had a good season too, but in 2020, he was coming off of a time where he sat out and didn't play football. He took care of his grandmother. He was back home. And so now you kind of look at it from the lens of what was also going on around him in the LSU program, which was the team did not have much leadership after that 2019 national championship team. And I think they just kind of lost their way. So if he gets into a room that has guys that can push him to be better, and also the fact that he'll be focusing all on football, that should help, you would hope. But, yeah, I would say weight was more of a concern. But to be honest with you, conditioning wasn't really an issue. He actually was pretty productive kind of start to finish in games, or he was consistent, I would say. But kind of weight, he could play it better weight and be in a better shape in that respect.
Again, talking about the Raiders' fourth-round draft pick out of LSU, Neil Farrell Jr., defensive tackle. Talking with my guy, Billy Embody. He covers LSU for Bengal Tiger on Three. Covers him like a glove. You can find Billy on Twitter at Billy Embody. And as far as his time at LSU, you mentioned seeing him back in high school. How much did you see his game grow? How much did you see him develop?
Yeah, that's the tough part because, you know, that 2019 team, he really emerged as one of the better defensive linemen on the team. 2020, he stepped away from the program for a bit. And then in 2021, he was really solid. But when you look at his career start to finish, you're kind of sitting there quite honestly saying, well, what if, you know, 2020, what if the pandemic and all that sort of thing hadn't played out the way it had, would he have continued on that trajectory? But you know, his best season, I think, was that 2019 season, which is, you know, fortunate for LSU. They you know, won a national championship. He won a national title. But I do think towards the back half of his career, it was kind of a disappointment in terms of, you know, you saw this greatness coming out of him in 2019, and you hope that he was going to be, you know, truly like an All-American type, if I'm being honest with you. And that never, you know, came about. But very talented football player. I think in the league, you just hope he puts it all together because it's certainly there.
Well, I'll tell you, if he had put it all together while he was at LSU, you know, instead of being a fourth-round pick, probably would have been a first-round pick, right? I mean, that's just kind of the nature of the beast. You realize it's going to be, you know, a learning curve for him on the next level. But it sounds like he's a guy that is willing to learn, and it sounds like he's a guy who's also willing to work really hard to get where he needs to be. So, obviously, that's a positive. When you look at his potential, do you think that he's a guy that could be a healthy part of a nice nice rotation on that defensive line.
I would say so. And especially as a rookie, and as he gets his feet wet, he can give you some good snaps during the course of the game. And again, we'll kind of see how he comes into camp in terms of shape and all of those things that he needs to do to be a pro. And I feel like if he does those things, then he'll be a productive player. Definitely a guy that fits into the rotation and can help just about any team.
Before I let you go, I was talking about Garrett Gilbert on the radio yesterday because he's the Raiders' third string quarterback right now. They brought him in, and I'm kind of convinced that he's going to be like a camp body, probably camp arm at best. But what did you see from Garrett Gilbert from his time at SMU?
That was a crazy time because, honestly, Garrett Gilbert probably saved June Jones's job a couple more years. Just get what he was able to do when he came into the program. I mean, he had some terrific games that I think he's still got a couple records in single games, especially. I'm not sure if the single season stuff is still standing, but he just really had an ability to extend plays. That was one thing. I mean, there were a couple plays over the course of his career where he ran for a touchdown to bounce somebody for a 2-point conversion, which were pretty wild kind of looking back on them. You know, that was a time when the program was kind of starting to show some cracks under June Jones. But, I mean, Garrett Gilbert was that guy that, you know, really held it all together, quite honestly. Without him, I think it could have been way worse than it was. And, you know, they went to some bowl games under Garrett Gilbert and
right.
Were still able to do that. So somebody that you look at where the program was when he committed with the wide receivers they had there, and if they would have kept bringing in that type of talent, probably would have been a team that would have been challenging for a New Year's Six Bowl, you know, kind of having that type of Hawaii type talk that June Jones had, you know, when they ended up facing Georgia in the Sugar Bowl all those years ago. But instead, you know, he didn't have the supporting cast around him. And you know, he really just carried that team to the best record he could. And, you know, still a very, very talented player. I mean, just was found ways to be productive and make plays.
There you go. There he is, Billy Ambody. Great stuff, my man. Great insight. Definitely appreciate you as always. Before I let you go, what do you got coming out on Bengal Tiger on 3 or SMU on 3?
Yeah, the big stuff right now is recruiting. You know, everybody wants to know about recruiting, how the classes are shaping up. So we got class prediction pieces and updates on new offers, where the coaches are recruiting, and also kind of looking ahead towards fall camp. What's still left to be answered? Where do they need to, you know, really improve or get better at it in the summer for both programs? And, of course, basketball, too. Recruiting is still a very much a focal point for both programs on that front. So lots of content to come on both sides.
Sounds good. We'll definitely be on the lookout for that. Billy, as always, my man, I definitely appreciate you. Again, you can find Billy on Twitter at Billy Ambody. Covers LSU and SMU. Great job as always, my man. We'll talk soon.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
So there it was right there, Raider Nation. That was my conversation about the fourth round draft pick, defensive tackle Neil Farrell Jr. out of LSU and what he could bring to the table. And he's a guy that there's a chance for him to, you know, get a part of that rotation, be part of that defensive tackle rotation. We know stopping the run is a big deal for Patrick Graham, and also getting pressure from the interior. Sounds like he can do a little bit of both, but be a part of a healthy rotation, which I think is very important. Most known unknown asked the question about the edge rushers. Where is the extra edge rushers that the Raiders are definitely going to need at some point? And that's a great question. We're going to see what they end up doing with that, but we do know that they have a plethora of defensive tackles, including their fifth round pick, Matthew Butler out of Tennessee. We'll try to have a breakdown of him coming up on tomorrow's show. Also on tomorrow's show, we'll have more news and notes of the day. We'll get back to some calls and texts right off that Locked On Raider podcast voicemail line, 707-654-4693. And of course, we'll have plenty of conversation for you as well. So Raider Nation, thank you so much for making the Locked On Raider podcast your first listen each and every day. Remember, you can find the show free and available on all platforms. Until tomorrow, Raider Nation, take care of yourself, take care of your family, love on your family, and most importantly, as always, just win, baby.